Intervju Radija Študent.
Billy Martin's Wicked Knee. Billy Martin, sicer član groove mojstrov Medeski, Martin and Wood, je pred dvema ali tremi leti skupaj s Curtisom Folksom, Markusom Rojasom in Stevenom Bernsteinom postavil skupino Billy Martin's Wicked Knee, v kateri žgejo plesno orientirane in sodobno začinjene plehkoračnice vseh vetrov.
Okay, so with me we have Steven Bernstein on trumpet, Curtis Folks on trombone, Markus Rojas on tuba and Billy Martin on drums, and this is
Wicked Knee.
And for start, I'd like to ask all or any one of you, this music that you're playing with Wicked Knee, it probably goes a long way back with all of you. What's your example, Steven, story with this sort of stomping, new release, dance music?
Well, in America, this is kind of the root of all the music. So this music is a root of jazz music, it's a root of rock music, it's a root of blues music. So as long as I've been playing music, this has been part of what I've done. And in the past couple of years, I've spent a lot of time in New Orleans, so getting more. When you spend time there, you hear the brass bands and you feel the way they do it. But we don't do it. We're not from New Orleans. We play it our own way. But it's the root of all this music. So that's where. And I play the trumpet, so the trumpet is a very important part of this music. So.
Not as much as the tuba. The tuba is the bass in this kind of music, and the music from New Orleans. So I think that's what makes it a brass band, really. If there's a tuba on the bottom, it's a brass band. If not, it's just a band with horns.
Exactly.
Where does that leave us, Curtis?
Yeah, I know. The cool. A little trombone.
Gotta happen.
So, but what in New Orleans, this music is still being played contemporarily much more than, let's say, from where you're coming from?
Absolutely. What? Brass band music is bigger in New Orleans than it is in New York City.
Yeah, but it's great. In some ways, it's kind of growing. There are these little pockets of like hipster or younger musicians that are putting brass bands together. But you know.
So this is still being a street thing there.
Well, not so much
New York
thing. No, no.
Because in New York, there's laws. They don't want people to play. They only want to have. Corporations on the streets. They don't want people. So they don't play. Seriously, they don't want people playing music on the streets unless they have a license. So it's hard to play. When we were young, we used to play on the street a lot, but you can't do that anymore. I mean, you can do it, but you might go to jail. So
even if you're a young aspiring musician who just wants to play somewhere below the bridge or something, this is actually illegal currently in New York.
It's usually illegal. I mean, people are doing it more and more. They're relaxing it a little bit. But for a long time, we had mayors that didn't want it at all. Now I have students that play in the streets, as long as they don't play in front of the wrong corporation, like Steven said. But there's public places they play in the parks, in Central Park and big parks in Brooklyn. And so it's happening more and more. And yeah, it's not even just New Orleans bands, but there's bandas from Mexico. That's a really big music now that has kind of similar roots. And we have actually lots of bands that play music from this part of the world. A lot of Bulgarian brass bands or you know, Balkan brass bands. That's very big in New York City right now. And so all of that is just mashing up. It's cool. And I don't really think we're really a New Orleans band. I mean, maybe the roots, but when you hear us tonight, it has almost not that much to do with it.
For me, this band, you know, what goes way back is the idea of brass and drums is really, to me, that's a tradition that goes in every direction for a long time. And for me, early recordings of African music, you know, field recordings of African music, Central Africa and stuff, where they weren't even using brass, but they were blowing through, you know, horns that were animal horns, and like all, you know, that to me is just as important. Like the New Orleans tradition, and also the contemporary, you know, chamber music is really important, you know, to all of us, you know. So we celebrate the instrumentation and we speak through the instrumentation, but it's not through New Orleans culture, it's through a lot of different cultures.
Actually, I was just wanted to ask you, probably New Orleans is, you know, it's there, it's very present. So when you're a young musician, you probably want to diverge from this just to get to sort of get somewhere on your own outside this very present music.
Well, when you're younger, you don't even know it exists if you live in New York or California or something. It's like you're not as close to New Orleans music. I mean, I grew up, New Orleans music to me was Dr. John, I mean, besides, you know, Satchmo, Louis Armstrong or something, or King Oliver. I mean, New Orleans was, with the contemporary music at the time, which was Dr. John,
the Meters.
And then the Meters, but, so we weren't
Dr. John, by the way.
What?
He's coming through.
Yeah,
he's
great. Listen, we don't diverge from it, but it's just something that it's part of our culture that's in the, you know, it's New Orleans music has been in pop music for a long time, but never diverge from it. It's just part of the language.
Yeah. And I guess it depends on what person you ask. I mean, we're older than some of the kids now that know about New Orleans music, but when I was a kid, I didn't know much about it. And I didn't want to play anything that had to do with tuba music when I was a kid. It was like Dixieland. I didn't like that kind of music because I was a New York City kid. I wanted to play like a funk bass player, so it was not so interesting to me to play New Orleans music. I thought it was kind of corny until the Dirty Dozen came out, and all of a sudden I realized it's not corny at all. Mm-hmm. Kirk Joseph, the incredible tuba player, just changed everything up. It's like the Jaco Pastorius of the sousaphone.
But you, especially you three, you had more experience with brass music, brass orchestras, brass music, as you have a long history with Jazz Passengers. So one could say this is a more logical continuation for you three, or especially for you, than let's say for Billy, who's come out of the blue, so to say.
Funny, but I'm the only brass
musician
instrumentalist in Jazz Passengers.
Right, it's not really a brass band.
Yeah, not really. But someone, but you know.
It's a big band, but
yeah.
Brass.
Yeah.
Especially when Joel Dorn mixed it. No tube trombone on it.
Yeah, trombone in the back. Colors, give me that. But yeah, the, of course, you know, trombone in street music is really important, even from the religious side when they had the shout bands, you know. And that instrument really does speak in the street, really, you know. Kind of gets his voice kind of emerges in the street music. And another thing people say, Dixieland, I didn't realize that the people in New Orleans are kind of offended by it.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
They hate that being across, like,
yeah, yeah.
Mason Dixie line,
yeah.
Southern, you know, they'd rather call it
trash.
I like ragtime.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit different. I think there is a difference.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, ragtime is really different. That's mostly piano music.
Right, mostly.
To me, that's kind of a... Like when I listen to some ragtime recordings, there is brass in it.
Yeah.
Not as much. But, like, it seems to come out of that Dixieland thing. Like, it's funky or something. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I mean, Dixieland came a lot later. That's the term that came later.
Came later.
That's the music I was aware of, only because I was from Brooklyn. I thought Dixieland was had to do with jazz, but really, that had nothing not that much to do with New Orleans, original music.
Right.
It was very, very different. I mean, but weirdly, usually we're talking about the three of us. We've all played in many groups together. We were just, actually, Curtis and I just did a very, very circus Henry Threadgill concert, you know, first time in many years. We were talking about that. Steven and I played in lots of bands together. We had Spanish Fly.
This music was very, I mean, even though it had, people would say, oh, it sounds like New Orleans music, they were just saying that because they had a tuba in it, you know. But really, we were playing like the most crazy, wild music we could come up with.
Right. And then we played in the Kamikaze Ground Crew, which is another kind of funny little brass group.
Like chamber, almost like chamber music.
Yeah.
And what about, didn't you play a little bit with Lester Bowie, right?
Yeah, I played
that's
a bunch, a lot. Mm-hmm. I Curtis played with Lester a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, Matthew Pass.
Yeah, so
what with him with the band.
Lester was a big influence on us, you know. But it's just a big mash. I mean, people in New York City don't have the same kind of tradition the way other places do. because there's so many influences so many places.
It's a city of immigrants. You know, I mean, that's the thing about New York. People, you know, the only people originally lived there were the American Indians, you know. So anyone who lived in New York City was an immigrant. So whether you had, you know, Jewish people coming in from Eastern Europe, or Irish people, or Puerto Rican people, or Black people coming up from the South, you know, it's like, it's just a city of immigrants, so everyone came in and brought in all their different influences, and that's what New York City is.
Well, one could say that you, Billy, are the most monogamous of the whole gang, as you really have a long time relationship with one band. This is quite a sort of, I know of all of you in very different bands and with lots of different musicians, while you're sort of more connected with Medeski and Wood.
Yeah, that's how you see it, because that's the most popular band, you know, like that I'm in. But I've done lots of gigs in between and before, so there's a lot of influences in there. But yeah, been very busy with Medeski Martin Wood for 20 years. The majority of the work, but you know.
When I was reading the texts about the band, I was wondering if you get annoyed because this trio gets so much attention. It's always referred to. I refer to it even now. So does it bother you that this is just overshadowing the other things you're doing musically?
Not really. No, I'm proud of it. You know, because yeah. I think we did a lot of good. You know, and we play a lot of variety of stuff, and all, you know, I mean, it's a good thing, you know. But sometimes when I have another group that I want to, you know, celebrate, it can overshadow it, of course. But that's the way it is.
And this band is supposed to happen 20 years ago, at least that the PR blurb says that.
Well. Yeah. Well, Steven and I met over 20 years ago, and I just said that, you know, about 20 years ago, it started the relationship with a trumpet player, you know, where I could talk to about someday I want to put a brass band together, and he was always someone there who was always there for me in that sense. So I came to him after 20 years and said, okay, maybe it's time to do this.
Yeah. Now, did you guys meet during the Lounge Lizards?
Yeah. Yeah, that's how we met.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. This last weekend also was a big celebration of John Lurie and the Lounge Lizards, where actually
all four of us
played, were a part of. But I was not in the band, but Billy was in the band, and Curtis was in the band, and Steven was in the band, and there was a big celebration. I guess that's where that relationship first started.
That's where it started, yeah.
Billy and Steven. Yeah. So it's very interesting.
So how is John at the moment? He's...
Seems good. I mean, he's been, you know, painting mainly. He had a very bad battle with Lyme disease, personal issues with a stalker, and so he couldn't play music, and he's been painting, but he seemed great at the concert.
Yeah, he's
he looked amazing.
We healed him, that was the whole point.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's better, everything is cool, and
everything's great, he's fine, next.
I mean, that sounds nice, because the last time I read an interview with him, he said that he can't listen to saxophone. That was some time that he didn't really respond good to saxophone, so hearing all of you.
No more saxophone for him, no more saxophone, but he's very active.
Yeah. Played great harmonica, sings, told good stories.
Screams.
Good screamer.
What about, there's another possibly peculiarity, you know, you mentioned that you really wanted this band to be yours, I mean that you could direct it by yourself, not to do it, you know, the way once again the trio works, which is more group work. That's quite slightly different than the usual talk in this sort of music, which is all on collaboration and stuff. But, you know, as you explicitly mentioned, that you wanted to direct the band?
No, when I,
what I was probably saying was that I wanted to write more, I wanted to compose more, but as far as directing, I had no desire to just be the director of the band. I mean, I knew that everybody any one of us could run the band, and I need that. I need help from these guys. I need a lot of help with calling cues and things like that. There's no way I could direct the band. But I did envision getting to a point where we don't even have to direct, that we play seamlessly, we know the music by heart without reading or anything, and that's happening little by little. To clarify, it was more about wanting to write, mm-hmm. and write music for the band. That was exciting for me.
So what, you say you're still not totally there with the seamless communication?
It's a process that's always continuing. So yeah, to be honest with you, I never had one specific goal. We've succeeded. I mean, we're, band sounds great. We have lots of great music to play. Everything's great. But there's always evolution going on, so.
Yeah, with improvisation, improvised music, it's always going to change. That's what makes that kind of music great. I mean, there's lots of improvisation in this band. And actually, my favorite tunes are Billy's tunes because they feel most personal, So that's cool. I mean, it would be cool to just do only some sets of only Billy's music, or maybe even a whole record where we only do Billy's music. Because it's, it's personal and real.
Yeah, and I need to learn. I'm learning so much, working with these guys and also finding out what works and what doesn't, And what doesn't work is me leaving the band. I mean in the sense of calling all the cues. Like really, I want this band to be able to call the cues when it's right for them.
Right.
And
right.
There's things about composing where it's like, I don't want to give them specific amounts of bars and then go to a section where the harmony changes. I want them to decide because we're improvising. And that's the parallel with S. Martin Wood, is that we had things that we wrote, but it was never knew when it was going to change until it felt right, and then someone would call it or it would just happen. That to me is like more about what music is really about. It's like to be expressing yourself as one organism and knowing when it should change in the moment. It's not like eight bars and then this. Not all the time. Sometimes.
What about the dancing component? I mean, this music has the potential to make one dance, but how often do you manage to actually realize this potential?
When we were in, what was that town?
Milwaukee.
We had the whole dang town dancing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you gotta be, people need to feel, it's not.
They are receptive.
It's really about, we're doing what we're doing. And it's really about the people. If they're open and they wanna dance, they will dance, but.
They're feeling it.
We can only do so much, and people need to be like, we were in Austria yesterday, which is a beautiful place, but it's not really a very physical. People up there a little more intellectual there, But man, I'll tell you something. You get out there to Milwaukee in a free concert in the summer, everyone's been drinking. There's gonna be some dancing.
Yeah.
Oh, that was free outside.
Yeah, it was outside. It was nice.
Well, essentially, because I grew up dancing, and
we were dancing in Austria.
And we were dancing
in Austria.
And dancing is one of those things I feel is almost under attack. People just don't do it as much. I don't know why, but that's one of my favorite parts about this group. When we do get to make people dance, that's a really powerful thing. I mean, you just feel your whole self like, wow, that you help move people, not just inside but on the outside. That's like, it's like my dream. I always wanted to be in a band that made people dance.
That's, yeah.
I love that. That's like my favorite thing.
Yeah, me too.
Any kind of dancing. Yeah. I don't care whether it's like kind of jumping around, jerking, or, so I think if we could, when we achieve that, I feel that's like the best gigs of ever, But I don't think it has much to do with us. We're going to play the way we play. And if we can, if the audience feels loose enough to go there, shit, that's cool, man.
That's why I play the drums. That's why I decided to play the drums, to make people dance.
Yeah, music.
That's where it started for me, and it's still a very strong desire that I have.
But one could suspect that, you know, your musical creativity is goes in many directions, but it's the more of the sitting audience type, my impression, that the even this band of yours gets, you know, the venues which are not really dance friendly.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, man. Where you play and how you make your money is a different thing, you know? I mean, we could do a whole concert of music that would be for sitting, and we can, you know, play pieces that are very more intellectual. But I mean, it depends. You feel the room, you feel the space, right? In Milwaukee, it was an outdoor concert, people drinking beer, so shit, it was perfect for dancing.
Right.
But if we're in an inside place and all the walls are black and, you know, then if it feels more austere, then okay, then we'll go in that direction. So it really does depend on whatever the feeling is. That's also part of the improvisational thing. We're like, okay, then that's the vibe of the improvising. It's gonna go into people's heads more than their feet.
Alright, people's heads more than their feet, or the other way around. We got to finish off as
we're
you
trying
got...
to bring the heads and the feet together.
Yes.
It's a difficult thing.
They like to meet them right in the middle, right between the head and the feet.
Where
were that space between the head and the feet? That's where we want to get them.
That's where we want to get them.
Between two limbs.
Between two limbs.
That's the title.
That's an MFW
tune. What's the title?
Head over heels.
Heels overhead.
Yeah.
Between two rooms. I like that. Venues that both, and it's like that's the beauty about what we do is we try to bring it together. Venues often it's like one or the other.
Right. Yeah.
Well, we're gonna see about today. There's not gonna be any seats in the hall. So, anyways, you're halfway there.
Great.
All right.
And well, have a nice sound check or something.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Poslušali smo pogovor s vsemi štirimi člani zasedbe Billy Martin's Wicked Knee, ki bo nocoj skupaj s crkljansko pleh mafijo, kar češ brez band, nastopala v kinu Šiška. To in ono jih je povprašal Anže Zorman.
Intervju Radija Študent.